The Busy Marketer Podcast, Episode 19, Social Media Marketing for Nonprofits with KP Kelly. Welcome to the Busy Marketer Podcast, advice and inspiration for digital marketers in all industries. Each week, I interview the best and the brightest marketing minds on topics including social media, email, landing page optimization, SEO, and more. Together, we cut through the clutter and focus on the important tasks to help you be a better marketer for your small business, church, or organization. I'm your host, 17-year online marketing veteran, BJ Smith. In this episode, we're chatting about social media and how small organizations can use it to boost their marketing. We're also discussing a man and his 255-mile run to help terminally ill kids. You'll find more about today's topics in the show notes at thebusymarketer.com/19. Let's go. Joining me today is my special guest, KP Kelly. Welcome to the show, KP.
Thank you for having me.
KP is the co-founder and director of Share for Kids, an organization that grants the last wishes of children facing life-threatening illnesses through the power of social media. He's also the owner of K2 Marketing, an Ohio-based digital marketing firm that focuses on social media marketing, email marketing, and blogging for companies of any size in any industry. KP has managed the social media for companies as small as solopreneurs to Fortune 500 companies. He currently resides in Columbus, Ohio. After a brief and relatively unsuccessful attempt at professional basketball career, KP turned to marathon running as his competitive outlet. He has run 44 marathons, including the coveted Boston Marathon, twice. And this coming Monday, Labor Day, September 1st, he will be running across Ohio 255 miles to raise support for Share for Kids, as well as support for the Alzheimer's Association and Cornerstone of Hope. KP, again, welcome to the show. Get us started by telling us how you got into digital marketing.
Sure. Pretty much fresh out of college, while I was still dabbling in the attempt at professional basketball, I knew that even if basketball worked out, that would be about a 1 hour a day job, freeing up about 23 more hours. So looked for something else to do, and I started a recruiting company. And as a small business owner, solopreneur at the time, I was always looking for inexpensive ways to market my company. And began networking a lot in person. Every networking event I could find, I showed up at, and it kind of became my thing, what I became known for. And I started teaching other people about networking and seminars. And this is right about when, I don't know if you remember eCademy. Yeah. That was a an old school kind of LinkedIn. And LinkedIn started, and I discovered social media and social media networking. And discovered instead of going to all of these events, I could sit at home, reach a lot more people in a shorter period of time. So I started to educate myself on social media marketing, transitioned from recruiting into social media marketing full time back when it was pretty much just LinkedIn and some blogging and things like that before the Facebook fan pages and Twitter and everything else took off.
Great. Well, one of the things I like to start everybody off with is to kind of get in your head a little bit and find out what it is, what your marketing philosophy is. What is your mantra when it comes to the way that you run your digital marketing?
Sure. My philosophy is kind of to not have a philosophy, which I know is somewhat of a cop-out and a philosophy in itself. So it makes me sound hypocritical there. But I think every client, every person is unique. And then every client, small business, large business, nonprofit, they're unique. They have their own philosophies, their own product services, their own goals and methods about going about things. So in terms of marketing and social media marketing, I've not found one all-encompassing, one-size-fits-all philosophy that works for every client. So I guess my philosophy is to not have that single philosophy and to be open to creating strategies and processes that work for each individual client.
You're right. Every company, every organization is very different, and their audiences are very different.
True.
Tell us a little bit about Share for Kids. Tell us the history behind it, how you got into it.
Sure. I've grown a fairly large social network of my own, and a couple years ago, I had my nephew Kian was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. And through spending time with him and then getting to learn people, meet people with cystic fibrosis in that organization, I started to meet a lot of children that were suffering from illnesses and the families that were having financial troubles. And they all had these online campaigns or education awareness campaigns. And people wanted me to share those campaigns on my social networks. And I kept doing that. And then one of my good friends and business partners, Anna Hendricks, noticed that my timeline and my tweets were getting filled up with all these campaigns I was sharing. And she said I should come up with an idea to start a nonprofit that helps share these wishes and grant some wishes. And I told her that that was a fantastic idea, and I nominated her to start it with me. Flew out to New York where her business is, and we hashed out the idea at a couple of different New York coffee shops, and Share for Kids was born.
What sort of wishes are you guys fulfilling these days?
Sure. It's somebody once described us as Make-A-Wish's little sister, and it's probably a fairly good assessment. Our wishes are small. They're not meeting Peyton Manning or Taylor Swift, though we get requests for that every single day.
Sure.
They're mostly toddlers, and so they don't have that wish to meet those people, and maybe they don't qualify for Make-A-Wish. So they're interactive wishes that people through social networks can get involved with. So for example, Kian, who was our first wish, my nephew, he loves trains.
Right.
And so we had people emailing photos of trains with a well wish, so just something to encourage him. And every day he gets a couple of emails with photos of trains from all around the world. His parents print them out, and so he loves getting those. But then even more for his parents, it's almost more for the parents because they get that something little, but something positive every day coming in.
Right.
And they feel all that support. So they get to feel that they're not alone, that there's people out there that care, and then that there's just, you know, something little, something positive to help the kids smile throughout their struggles of their day.
I could imagine what some of these folks are going through. I have two small children myself. I'd say small. They're five. One just turned five, and the other one's getting ready to turn seven. And honestly, I have a hard time following Share for Kids because I guess an empathetic human. I tend to put myself in other people's shoes a little too easily. And I just couldn't imagine going through that with my kids. But I think it's a wonderful thing that there are, you know, there's someone like you guys that are out there that are looking out for the parents that are trying to do something else to bring another smile to those kids' faces. And I'm very glad to have you on to talk about this.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's very rewarding. It is challenging. I'm similar to you and the empathy I have for people, and I don't think it will ever get easier. Hearing the stories and meeting the people, I kind of go on that emotional journey with them each time. But I'm glad that happens. I would not want it the other way around. It is challenging at times.
Okay, I'm going to ask you the question that everyone is dying to know.
Okay.
Why on earth are you running 255 miles for charity when you could have just dumped a bucket of ice water on your head?
Yeah. that idea didn't come around until after I came up with the plan. So that would have been,
For what most folks don't realize that, well, I guess they may realize, but I've run one marathon, nowhere near what you've run, and at a much slower pace because I couldn't even dream of qualifying for Boston within the next, I don't know, 10 years or so. But it takes a lot of training just to get to that 26.2 miles. And you're basically going to be running, and I guess you already are running, ultra marathons every day to prepare for this. This is something that is not, you don't just jump out of bed and say, I'm going to run 255 miles over a course of, what is it, 5 or 6 days?
Yeah, 6 days.
6 days, yeah.
Yeah, the training has been interesting. So I've run several marathons, and typically in my marathons, that wall, I always hit the wall, which for you non-marathon runners, it's about mile 18 to 22, where it's just that distance and it just happens where the body kind of tightens up and cramps up and,
yes,
and tries to tell you, please stop this. Don't keep running. You don't have to do this. And for me, I would always hit that no matter how much I would train. And then I would always just kind of, that mile 25, I'm dragging myself across the finish line. And so I never thought ultra marathons or running anything more than that would be possible for me. But then I've kind of been amazed at how the body responds to training.
Yeah.
And as I've kind of just pushed myself past it, and a lot of it, I mean, my first run over when I got to 30 miles, I was stopping to walk a little bit while I was eating food and going much slower, but my body responded well to that training. With that said, I've done several 30-mile runs. I've done several runs of 40 miles, but I'm going to be doing 48 and a half each day for the first three, and then a little bit less for the next three. So it'll still be quite the challenge with the mileage for me.
Lots of carbs and ice baths, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's the fun part has been the carb loading, which traditionally I do year round, even when I'm not running, which is not great for weight, but so that's going to be fun. I'll get to eat an entire large pizza probably every night next week to carb load.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking large pizza. I'm thinking stomach issues.
Yeah, that'll probably happen. So I'm actually, in terms of diet, a lot of things. So for carbs, sticking to plain bagels. Probably I found that bread with a little of olive oil to get the fat I need. Those type of things will be easy on the stomach. I'll be consuming that all day long.
So how many miles are you running right now? What's your week looking like?
It varies because, like you said, the training, which you have to do to run a marathon, and then finding the time is difficult because these 40-mile runs are taking me, it's 8, 9, 10 hours through my day. So I've actually had my tablet and my cell phone at times working for 4 or 5 hours while I'm jogging and, trying to fit that in. And so I've done, for the past 2 months, I've done a 30 or 40-mile run about twice a week, giving myself 2 to 3 days off in between. So my mileage has been around anywhere between 90 and about 120 miles a week, which I used to, even when training for my marathons, I would only run about 45 to 50 a week at most.
Right.
So I've been putting in 100 miles a week for the last 2 months.
Probably around, I'm thinking it was June or July this year, I put out a video and I was stressing the importance of exercise for busy marketers.
Right, I saw that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, great. My idea was that to be better, to have better focus, and this is what worked for me, is that, I found I was just kind of scatterbrained and all over the place, and when I started to exercise, I found better focus. I had more energy. I was able to concentrate longer, and I was actually doing better at my job because I was keeping that exercise routine, that regimen going. And one of the things that kept me from doing it for so many years was I couldn't justify the time. Uh-huh. So when I looked at it, I would say, you know what? I get up at 5:30 every morning. That's the time I have to get up to get my kids ready for school. The company I was with back then, I had to be at work at 7:30. By the time I made it through the entire workday, picked the kids up, got home, cooked dinner, got them ready for bed, I was exhausted. All I wanted to do was fall into bed. When do you have time to exercise? You have to make it.
You do.
And talking about the miles that you're putting in right now.
Well, I don't have children, so that does, it does make it a lot easier to fit the time in.
But still, I mean, the hours that you're putting in during the week, nobody has an excuse.
Yeah. It's been a little challenging to find the time, but like I said, doing some work and finding ways to get things done while I'm on the go has helped. So I can't use that as an excuse. And then just having that goal, and as it's gotten closer, knowing that I have to be prepared for it. And I've told everybody I'm going to do it, and started raising funds and things like that. And so it's just me and the miles I have to put in order to get it done. So it's been motivating me to get out every day and find the time.
Well, I don't know if this is any motivation at all. I sent this to you in a message early on, and just basically for my accountability to help you out, help you raise a little bit more awareness. I'm committing to run at least 5 miles a day during the same time that you're going to be running your run across Ohio.
That's great. And I think I'll, looking forward to sharing that and trying to get other people on board with you and doing the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got Instagram is one of my favorite forms of social media, and pretty much everybody that I connect with on there, they're runners, a few marketers, a few friends. But so I'm hoping that I can inspire some of them to help them spread the word. Same thing with Twitter as well. And speaking of, so Share for Kids is built around social media.
Right.
How are you using social media to support and promote your run?
Sure. Well, the run's been primarily advertised through social media. So Share for Kids, we have a pretty large following of about 125,000 followers. And then my own Twitter, I have about 225,000. So every day I'm sending out content about the run, about the cause, with a link to a GoFundMe page to get the word out there. And you had mentioned Instagram and right. the runners that follow you. And what I found, and other runners out there probably found, the running community is a great community.
Yeah.
And it's small and large at the same time. But, you know, almost, there's all these different causes and everybody's running or walking for something. but it never gets old. But the running community, they tend to always support each other and share each other's content. And so I have this network of people following Share for Kids that are engaged in the children and wanting to find ways to help and help the children. And then this running community that kind of follows me and therefore follows Share for Kids that is used to learning about charities and getting involved. And so they kind of all come together, and it's created this engaged audience that is really helping to share the links and share about the cause. I think there's been over 10,000 shares of the page itself, which is for me bigger than any fundraising at this point, is getting the word out there, saying hi, here we are, and having people share about the cause.
One of the things that, you know, you're talking about with how Share for Kids is so unique is that it's not always about money. You know, obviously there's things that you guys want to do that that do cost money, and it does cost money to run an organization and do these sorts of things. But like you were saying with Kian, with the sharing of the photos of the trains, you can bring awareness through social media and still help these kids out.
Yeah, it helps out a lot. I mean, with Kian, with the trains, and then, you know, we share about what he has cystic fibrosis, and people right. don't know what that is. And so they read up on that. And a lot of times then people discover networks in their own community of people maybe suffering for that and ways to plug in, all from just kind of seeing one tweet and finding ways to get involved.
On an earlier episode, I talked to Chris Brereton about his company Powered By and how they help nonprofit organizations in digital marketing by providing them with mobile apps. He's working with organizations like the United Way, organizations that have a large structure and a budget to work with.
Sure.
Share for Kids is run by a small team, and I know you guys are professional social media marketers, but most small organizations aren't that lucky. If a small organization were to approach you for help getting started in social media, what are some of the first steps you would tell them to take?
Well, there's a lot of things they can do on a low budget or no budget at all. In terms of, you know, my specialty is social media marketing. And for a nonprofit charity organization that has a low budget, social media is great because almost everything that you need to do on there, you can do for free. And I would encourage them to create their Facebook fan page, to create their Twitter account, and then just start to get content out there that their target audience would be interested in, separate from their own fundraising.
Okay.
Meaning what the mistake a lot of nonprofits make that are low budget do is they have an immediate need for donations, for cash coming in to support things that they want to do. And there's that natural urge then to just go out and ask and to go out and ask and go out and ask. But your audience tunes you out a little bit, and they also don't understand, you know, you're asking for it, but what are you doing? What are you doing with it? What is your organization about? And so the key to drawing in an audience on a low budget is just to provide that content that's related to what you're doing that your audience will find valuable. So as an example, for us with Share for Kids, most of our first posts for a long period of time, and we weren't paying for ads and promoting it, was various different illnesses that we were finding out about. We were sharing information about them. We were sharing health tips for children, okay, and parenting tips for children, which drew in that audience of people that were actively reading what we were putting out because it was adding value to them in a lot of different areas. And then we start to sprinkle in some of the fundraising efforts there. But so for social media marketing for the nonprofit, same for other things that they may be doing, they have to find a way to add value to the people that they want to serve. When they do that and when they offer that through social media, that's when they can start to grow a little bit.
Yeah, we're talking about small organizations and nonprofits, but sure, what you're actually saying here applies to a lot of other small businesses as well.
It does. Same philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When Facebook's business pages came out, all these e-commerce companies got in there and were like, this is great, and I'm going to put up a new product every day. And they just started plastering their page with their products. This is what I'm selling. This is what I'm selling. Buy, 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 buy. You know, those are the companies that lost their fans very quickly or ignored and tossed out of people's news feed.
Yeah. And they're kind of the reason why Facebook changed their algorithm and changed how they decide which posts that they make visible to the individual user. Because people got so annoyed with the nonstop sales pitches,
right,
that Facebook created a way that they basically hid most of those from people so that they didn't show up in the timelines.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, folks say it's a pay to play, but you know, at the same time, you have to show valuable content. You can't just sit there and scream at your audience with a megaphone. You know, you got to have a conversation. You've got to open it up, and just throwing your products or asking for money constantly is not the way to do it.
Exactly. Especially on Facebook.
Right. Okay, KP, let's move on to our next segment. This is the time where all of us busy marketers come together and we share our stories. Marketers may come from different industries, have different backgrounds and educations, but we all face many of the same challenges. Sharing those experiences has helped me tremendously over the years, which is why I created this segment. And this is the time where our listeners get the benefit of learning from your experiences, KP. Welcome to the group therapy session.
I am ready for some therapy. Let's do this.
I'm a big believer in learning from past mistakes and that most successes are results of lessons learned from trials and errors. Tell us a story about a time when things didn't work out as planned. Tell us about a failure and what you learned from it.
Sure. It's kind of a failure that I made several times. Just the first thing that comes to mind for me. And it's in terms of obtaining new clients. What I found myself doing quite often is I would change my business to fit the needs of that prospect that I met, that small business that has a need.
Right.
And so I had my, you know, like everybody else would, my set cost of what primarily I was offering to manage people's Facebook and Twitter, which is still the bulk of my business. And so I had my set price and what that cost, and here's all the things that you get for that money. And I would meet small businesses then that, one solopreneur or a contractor or someone like that, or maybe they just have two or three part-time employees that didn't have the budget for, right, for what I was offering and legitimately didn't, not just that they didn't see the value or social media was new to them and that type of thing, but they were pinching pennies to get by already and just didn't have the budget. And so I would try to strip away some of the things that I would offer, in order to get that cost down to something that they could afford. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm spending less time than on them, so I can justify less money. But what happened was a client was a client, and I would end up doing pretty much the same work for the same amount of time, and sometimes even more, because they were maybe a smaller business, newer to business, didn't understand some of the things. I would have to educate them along the way.
Or, right,
explain why we needed to post this or share this type of content. And you start spending more time getting less money. And I have the charitable mindset and I want to help all the people, but you can't do it. And I found myself with a lot of headaches trying to change my business to fit the other people's, the businesses I was finding to fit their needs. And so what I learned was, well, not to do that. but that that my business is my business, and my model is my model, and the service that I offer is the service I offer, and it costs what it costs, and I don't have to apologize for that. And maybe there's occasional exceptions, but I can't change what I do to fit everybody, and I do a disservice to them when I try to take a little bit off of what I do, because they're not getting the best of me. They won't get the best results. And in the end, it just, it doesn't usually work out well. So I stopped doing that.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to turn away clients for that reason, because what a lot of folks don't understand, and you basically said it, is that, you know, it takes these steps to lead to a certain type of success. And when you start taking away steps out of the process, and you're only doing things halfway because that's all you're getting paid to do, then they're not going to see the growth. They're not going to see the success, and they may end up spending more money in the end to try to fix it or try to get it where they really want to be. I mean, it's
right.
And it's almost, I don't want to say it's throwing away money, but yeah, I see what you're saying there.
Yeah. And I would strip away things like, you know, one of my unique things about what I do, or one of the reasons people find me or use me, is often my ability to grow a target audience, maybe a little bit quicker or a little bit larger than most people do. And so I would maybe do that a little less aggressively, or I would offer to post less frequently. But taking away those things, it doesn't work. You post less frequently, fewer people see their post. Their audience isn't growing. No one's clicking to order off their website. They're right. Not happy. I'm not happy because I'm spending too much time. And it's definitely a failure story for me.
And if they're not seeing the results, then they're calling you and they're taking up even more time.
Right. Even more time.
Let's talk about efficiency. Efficiency is the key to being a successful busy marketer. We all wear so many hats that we can't afford to be distracted by every new bright, shiny object that the digital world is presenting to us every day. Mm-hmm. We have to make smart decisions to be efficient so we can focus on the important tasks. So share with us a time where you made changes to be more efficient. Tell us a story and what steps you took.
Sure. Well, I'm always looking for ways to be more efficient, because saving time is huge. And as I add more clients, I need to find a way to free up more time. And you said all the new innovations and the digital advertising and marketing world, and there's something new and great and shiny every single day. And a lot of times that product doesn't exist by the time you get around to replying to the person's email, but you still got to look at them. You got to look at all the different ways that you can save time. For me, a big thing has been automation. And it was something that I fought for quite a while. Automation meaning scheduling posts,
right,
throughout the day, especially with Twitter and Facebook. And I fought it for a long time because there is something more. I'm big into relationship building, and it's, you know, maybe somebody only sees somebody's Facebook post once, but when you get that person saying, "I'm friends with such and such company," they actually say that. They feel that connection. And so I always felt that maybe me typing it out live, real time, and sending the message was somehow more personal, and perhaps to a degree it was. But then I started to think of it more as I started to think of Ford and the assembly line and cars coming off the assembly line, and how perhaps it would be labeled more organic if one person sat there and created and built the car all themselves with just their hands. But it's far more efficient to use a bunch of people and use machines to create that car. And the same has been true for social media. So I stopped fighting it and got into automation with using Hootsuite. Okay. Is what I first started to use. And I've tried other things and stuck with it. But to automate my tweets. So I've done all the research. I found the optimal times to post. I know that I have to put out a certain amount of content. And I use Hootsuite to schedule my posts throughout the day, sprinkling in some ones that we're doing real time, but saves a tremendous amount of time. And it's great for my clients too, because they get more content out. They get it out at the optimal times as well. So Hootsuite and automating has been tremendous for me in terms of my efficiency.
Great. So KP, I love hearing these stories. Like I mentioned before, I've talked to a lot of different marketers, and many of them express similar frustrations. And tools like Hootsuite and Buffer, depending on, you know, sure, how you're using it, you know, those are very valuable tools, and as long as you still have that relationship in there. But learning from each other, this is what makes us better. And now we can take these lessons and turn them into our own successes. So I'd like for you to share a story of success with us, one that had the most impact on you personally.
It is actually a story of success that was pointed out. My co-founder of Share for Kids is Anna Hendricks, who is a social media consultant herself. And she kind of pointed out this success to me and the reason why I was successful. And I didn't realize it until she did. And so it's a learning lesson that I've learned really here. Just recently. And that is, one of my clients is, Mac Jo Fit, which you can see her at Mac Jo Fit on Twitter, but she's a personal trainer, that trains people in her home. So one of those solopreneurs out of Cleveland. And also she happens to be, close friend, my favorite person in the world, probably.
Okay.
Well, definitely. I won't sell her short. She's my favorite person in the world. Awesome. She started this business. And I helped her with it and helped her with creating a business plan, but she was going to rely heavily on social media marketing. And being the one that was guiding her in her business, I told her it was in her best interest to use me. So I helped her with her social media. In just less than a year, she has more Twitter followers than probably any of my clients, except for a couple of the large ones. Her engagement is kind of off the hook in terms of any way you want to rate it. Facebook page is going great. And the majority of her clients and prospects are coming through social media. She just got two new clients this week from social media.
Great.
And what I found was what Anna pointed out is part of the reason for my success in helping her was the care. That relationship was built. I had a genuine care and concern to see her succeed, not just for the business, but for her personally. And then my actions followed that up. I couldn't help but to. So when I had a couple of free moments, time and effort was put towards helping her grow her social network. And also on her end, that her business was that important to her, that failure wasn't an option too. And the success story of it is that, and what I learned to take away with other clients was, when I develop that relationship with the client, when I learn what's important to them, why it's important, and not just on the business side, but to them personally, what does it mean to them as the business owner to have their business succeed? It creates this relationship where there is an honest and genuine and deep care that I have to see them succeed. And whether right or wrong, that shows up in our work for everybody. When you have that care for that person and the care to see that business succeed, you do little extra things and you have a little bit more energy and maybe a little bit more creativity, spend a little more time. And that really goes a long way. And it's why McKenna of Mac Jo Fit, while her business has been, her social media marketing has been good. And I've been working on implementing that with all of my clients and reminding myself of why I care about that client, of why I care about that individual business owner. And remembering every day how important it is to help them make their business succeed.
I like that. I really like this perspective because, yeah, that emotional connection is important. And that's with just about anything you do. If there's a positive emotional connection, you're going to do better at that job. And it won't seem as much like work or a chore. Well, KP, thank you for sharing those stories with us. Before we kick up the next segment, we're going to take a brief pause to thank our friends. Over 9 million users and the world's top brands trust Hootsuite to schedule, manage, and measure their social media campaigns. Save time by scheduling hundreds of messages and launching multiple campaigns at once across multiple social networks. With Hootsuite Pro, you can manage up to 100 social profiles, including Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, Instagram, and YouTube from one web-based dashboard. Plus, you get to measure your social media campaigns and track performance with custom social analytics reports. Busy marketers, you can get your free 30-day trial and start running your social media like a Fortune 100 company by going to thebusymarketer.com/Hootsuite. Every year, 43% of computer users lose irreplaceable files. Even those who use on-site backup methods, such as CDs, memory sticks, and external hard drives, are at risk. Fires, floods, theft, and other disasters can render on-site backups useless. Carbonite Online Backup eliminates the risk of losing files by automatically backing up the irreplaceable photos, music, emails, financial records, and other valuable files on your computer to a secure offsite location. Carbonite takes less than 5 minutes to install and begins working right away to protect your most valuable files, continually updating your backup while you work without slowing down your computer. The Busy Marketer listeners can try Carbonite free today by going to thebusymarketer.com/carbonite. Let's move on to our quick advice questions.
Sure.
These are short answer questions, but feel free to elaborate on any of them as you see the need. Are you ready?
Sure. And you've already learned through this interview so far. Short answers aren't my strength, but I'll focus on it.
Well, we've got some time. We're good.
Okay. All right.
What one piece of advice would you give to every busy marketer?
Well, we touched on it a little bit before, but definitely finding ways to save time, whether that's automation or looking at ways to be efficient and not being afraid to spend a little bit of money when you need to on those things that save you time. I fight that sometimes myself.
Yeah.
Anything you can do as a marketer to save yourself time, to automate some of your processes, to be a little bit more organized, it's huge.
Great. If you were starting a digital marketing company program from scratch for an organization that has only one or two people, what areas would you focus?
Well, it depends. Because of my whole...
That goes back to your philosophy. Yeah.
Although I think I've stated about 20 different philosophies already here in the last 30 minutes, but I would actually take this kind of in terms of social networks.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm a big Twitter guy, but I would encourage people to focus on Twitter and spend their time on that. And the reason for that is I view Twitter as kind of the hub of which all social networking happens around. A lot of times when people post on Instagram, Pinterest, and still Facebook and other networks, they're usually and often automatically sharing that on Twitter as well.
Right.
And so that's where it's kind of the hub that everything focuses around. And Twitter's just easier to grow an audience a little bit quicker. It's a network where you can get your own content out there and self-promote a little bit more, because that self-promotion / sometimes spam, it's a little bit more acceptable through Twitter. So it's just a little easier to have a little bit of success on Twitter first for that small organization with those the one or two people that are in that organization. It would make sense to start and focus on Twitter first.
Okay. What new advances in digital marketing are you most excited about today?
Well, I get excited every day, and then something else comes out the next day. I think I'm getting a little excited about what might happen with different, you know, we talked about Facebook being pay to play, but different ad opportunities on the social networks. All of them have been, you see the social networks, they sell for billions of dollars, but they've not had ways that they're bringing in revenue. And they're just, Facebook's really just in the infant stages of learning how to make revenue. And part of that way is through ads. And all the social networks, their ad programs have not been great. And Facebook's has gotten a lot better, but Twitter is kind of, I have mixed feelings on paying to play with Twitter, but they're all making advances in what they're offering. And so I'm getting a little excited about the possibilities of those networks and the advertising opportunities and all the other things that marketers might be able to do with the social networks coming up here soon.
There have been a lot of advances in the last just few weeks, you know, over this summer. When it comes to advertising opportunities and social media, I mean, you're absolutely right. Facebook with their new video tools that they have,
sure,
where you can put call to action buttons and you can create custom audiences based on who's actually viewed your video and turn around and follow up with them later. Twitter, their remarketing. If you're into Twitter marketing, you know, the fact that I can say, here's a particular product or a service, and I'm honestly doing this. Yeah. If you came to my site and you visited one of my services, then you're getting a cookie. And if I want to, I can go back and remarket that service to you on Twitter. You know, it's helping us narrow things down. It's actually becoming a lot more efficient. I don't want to compare it to Google, but for so many years, Google has dominated the online advertising industry, and it's frustrating. I mean, it's basically a monopoly. Right. And the fact that there's, you know, some of these social media guys they're stepping up and they're giving us more tools to work with. I think that's really exciting.
Yeah. And it'll happen with every network. They all have to find ways to make money. So even, you know, Instagram, probably even Snapchat, they're all going to have opportunities there to advertise.
That's right. If you could use only three social media platforms, which would you choose? Twitter,
right. I've nailed that one home there. Definitely Twitter, Facebook. And in both of those too, it's because I enjoy them, but you just have to, right now those are the options. I mean, Facebook people for personal use, but then for business as well, that fan page. Then the third one, I mean, I would say depends. I should say LinkedIn because it's business related and it's professional. But I'd probably, and you may feel the same way about this network we mentioned before, but Instagram, which I've gotten a lot more involved with it recently. I wasn't big on it for businesses for a while. I think people were a little ahead of themselves when a year or two ago they were saying how great it was for businesses, and it's kind of starting to come around then. But more so, I just find it fun myself for personal use.
Yeah,
and that's got to be part of it too. It's just not all business. You have to have fun with it, especially if you're in social media marketing. And so Instagram, I kind of find that to be a little fun. So that would probably be my third one.
Yeah, I think Instagram is a very good relationship building tool. Mm-hmm. It is definitely not a place where you're going to go and hard sell.
Right.
And marketers, we need to tread lightly. And I think a lot of companies are starting to figure that out finally. But yeah, I think it's a great way as an organization, business to get out there and kind of open yourself up, let people see the inside and some of the fun things that are going on as well.
Yeah. Show their personality a little bit, humanize their company.
Absolutely. Okay. What conference would you recommend to other busy marketers?
I haven't done a lot of conferencing recently. So I don't have an individual conference to name. My one piece of advice for people would be is outside of the large social media conferences that you can kind of find easy online is to go to some more specific industry related conferences. If you're a marketer and you have the bulk majority of your clients are in a particular industry,
right.
I'd encourage people go to a conference that's educating you on that industry. It's not about marketing or social media, but about their industry, and learning more about their industry is only going to help you more in marketing.
You mentioned when we were first talking about how you got into social media that you were networking. You're big in networking. Do you have any recommendations for folks getting out there and doing some of that networking?
Yeah, I think tie into your local chamber of commerce. Check out all of their websites. Almost every city has a chamber of commerce. They all have, you know, their typical monthly luncheons where everybody eats lunch and gets to give their elevator 30-second speech. But they usually have after-hour events as well that are often free. And you can go to all your different surrounding cities. Happy hour events or lunches, usually for free or just a couple of bucks. And those are good casual networking opportunities. And I found those to be pretty worth my time each time. And then there's also, you have to kind of realize there's an element of fun to the networking events too. So pick events that maybe you would enjoy. The ones to stay away from are, you'll find some of these that are predominantly just all salespeople selling to salespeople, and there might be a large amount of people at an event, but that you won't benefit from. So your local chamber of commerce's, that's what they're there for. They're there to connect businesses and connect people. So you can look those up online, and they all have events going on every month that you can attend.
Great. All right. And last question: what one book would you recommend every busy marketer read today?
Well, this one is, I just read a friend, Anna Hendricks, my co-founder of Share for Kids, so kind of giving her a plug, but I really, really enjoyed it. She just put out her first ebook, which her website's annahendricks.com, and it's on there. But she did something kind of cool where she broke down each of the major social networks and went through the thought process of a business owner that's thinking about spending time on the networks and what the benefit of each network would be, what you would get out of it, why you would use that network, what's the demographics of that network, who uses that network, what time are they usually online, all those type of things. So a short little read gave kind of all that information. For a social media marketer, is good just to regurgitate to clients. A quick read with a lot of information there. So that's my most recent read this week that I was really enjoying.
No, great. That's an ebook. So I will put a link to that in the show notes so people can get to it and download it and check it out.
Great. That'd be awesome.
KP, thank you so much for your time today. You know, as I said before, I follow you on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. So I know this last piece is going to be right up your alley.
Okay.
I'd like you to leave us with a parting thought, a piece of advice, or a quote to inspire the listeners.
Sure. For you who follows me online and some of the other people that might, I have a tendency to quote myself, which I like creating. I like creating my own quotes and kind of find that fun. And one thing I often talk about is being 100% responsible for your actions. And so one of my quotes is that you're always 100% responsible for your actions. And when you take ownership of your actions, past, present, and future, you empower yourself. And I encourage people to take control of their life first by taking responsibility for your actions. And that's a kind of a huge self-motto that I live by. You can only control what you can control. And when you take responsibility for all the things around you, it really empowers you. And it's been living that quote through my life has been very helpful for me.
Great. And you tend to be a bit of a old school gentleman. You believe in good manners. Okay, I'll give you an example here.
I was trying.
I'm not saying old school in a bad way. I think it's a great.
No,
I think it's a great thing.
I was picturing the movie Old School and
no.
Comparing me to Will Ferrell. And, yeah.
No, I honestly, the other day, I was getting ready to take the kids out. My wife was out of town. It was my daughter's birthday, so I was going to take them out for lunch. And we were going to go to a fast food restaurant or somewhere real quick. And they're like, "No, we want to go to this restaurant." And I'm like, "Well, it's your birthday. We'll do what you want to. First thing I need to do is go take off my hat." Because I just remember reading a rant on, I think it was Facebook, where you talked about running into some guy who was wearing a hat in the restaurant. I'm like, you know what? I was raised better than that. I know that.
Yeah, there's a lot of little things like that that are pet peeves that bother me. And raised a little old school, and I do go on occasional rants, especially on Facebook about things like that. I believe it was a guy that was wearing a do-rag at a wine tasting event.
Oh wow!
And he was asked to take it off, and then also asked by his wife to take it off, but he didn't want to take it off.
So, for anyone else out there who wants these great pieces of advice beyond social media,
fashion advice, I offer it all. Not good advice usually, but it's there. I offer it freely.
It's good. It's good. Well, why don't you tell us ways that we can connect with you online then?
Sure. Well, Twitter, because I probably mentioned that. I don't know if I mentioned it maybe once or twice throughout the interview, but I am KP_Kelly, not KP Kelly. That was taken by somebody already who tweets me often saying I use his handle accidentally often, but KP_Kelly on Twitter. You can connect with Share for Kids, share4kids.org. It's share, then the number 4kids.org. And that is also our Twitter handle. And then Facebook, if you do facebook.com/ same thing, Share for Kids. And you can find Share for Kids online.
Great. And I will, since this is actually going to air before you go for your long run, I'm going to put a link to the GoFundMe page as well.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. Yeah, that will have, we'll be posting some information there on the run. And then the week of the run, all of my tweets will be somewhat related to the run. So I'll be live tweeting about the run, posting photos, posting videos, a lot of different content, but all about the run. So if people follow me at KP_Kelly, they'll be able to stay up to date on the run. If following somebody who's running a really, really long distance while consuming a tremendous amount of carbs is their idea of entertainment, then they got to check out my Twitter next week.
Well, it is for me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you'll be reading them. I know.
Well, thank you again for your time today, and best of luck on the run. And we'll be saying some prayers for you and for the Share for Kids organization.
Great. Thank you very much.
Let's give a big thank you to KP Kelly. And I will be keeping up with KP on his run next week. You can see links to his social media accounts as well as the GoFundMe page for this fundraiser in the show notes at thebusymarketer.com/19. That's the number 19. I'll also be posting pictures and videos for my support run. I said I'll be running 5 miles a day, and to be honest, that's going to be kind of a big deal for me since I've been slacking on my running lately. My wife and I made the decision to pull my daughter out of preschool at the end of July so she could hang out with me until she started kindergarten earlier this week. It's been a blast having her, but that threw off my normal routine, so I haven't ran in about a month. And I can tell my ability to focus and my sleep have been negatively affected. So I can't wait to get back in my routine. You can follow along with me on Instagram if you like, at @bjsmith_tbm, like the busy marketer. My Twitter is @bjsmithstrategy, and I've recently been posting to Vine too. Now it is time for the news. What's going on in digital marketing this week? I've enjoyed bringing you news each week, but I've decided that I don't want you to have to wait until Friday to get news. So I've created a new video series on YouTube, #TBM News, digital marketing news for the busy marketer. Go and subscribe to get news like this. Recently, Facebook announced that they are cutting down on spammy content in order to provide a higher quality news feed to their users. Specifically, they're targeting clickbait. According to Facebook, and this one is in quotes, clickbaiting is when a publisher posts a link with a headline that encourages people to click to see more without telling them much information about what they will see. They provided some text that you can actually see in my actual newsfeed or in their press release, but it says, an example, "You'll never believe which two stars got into a fight on the red carpet last night. Click to find out which starlet they were fighting over," with an arrow pointing to a bit.ly link. See, that's why us marketers, we can't have nice things. As you can tell, this is a tease. They tend to get many clicks, this type of clickbaiting does, but often have poor quality content behind them. How does Facebook know if an article has poor quality content? They're checking to see how long people spend reading the articles. If you click the link and come right back to Facebook, obviously you had very little interest in the article if you didn't sit there and read it at least for a few minutes. They're also looking to see how many likes, comments, and shares a post receives after clicking the link. If the user didn't feel the need to interact with the post after clicking it, or share it with their friends, or do anything, that sends a strong signal to Facebook that the article didn't have useful content. Facebook will also be giving less weight to links shared inside a status update that don't use their automatically generated link preview. In the past, when you shared a link on Facebook, it would simply give a small thumbnail picture along with a headline and some text. What I and many other marketers found was that these links were not getting the high engagement that we saw when we would share a photo. Why? Because that beautiful photo would take up much more real estate in our fans' news feeds. Those stinking little thumbnails that Facebook provided with our links in the preview were just terrible for engagement. So to fix that, what we would do is create a photo or a graphic to represent the article and post that along with our own text and include a link to the article inside the post. The problem is that opens the door for clickbaiting. The new link sharing now has a large photo from the article or webpage, along with the headline and some text to add context. This is going to give the user a better preview of the article and reduces the likelihood of it being clickbait because they can actually see what the article is all about. So what do you need to do now? If you're clickbaiting, shame on you. Provide quality content and you won't have to use misleading tactics to get your fans to visit your articles. Use the link update that provides an article preview rather than uploading your own photo, and use a link in the description. Always test to make sure your engagement is better. But from what I've seen so far, using that link preview gives me a nice large picture. It gives me the headline and the text that gives context to the article that I had. So I don't really need to go through that extra effort of uploading a separate photo. Twitter is also making news this week with Flight School. What is Flight School? Well, I'm glad you asked. KP and I talked about all the new marketing tools that the big social media platforms are developing to help digital marketers navigate all of their new goodies. Twitter has created an online training system aimed at helping marketers navigate Twitter, its ad system, and all of their tools, including Vine. Flight School, hashtag take flight. The downside? Flight School is for agencies. Twitter knows that they need the support of agencies to compete and continue to grow market share in the social business space. They need these agencies to understand their new products and to help promote them to their clients when they become available. They basically want to turn us into fanboys, and you know, I'm okay with that. I'm signing up for Flight School, and I hope to be able to pass along some of that knowledge back to you guys. As I often say, I love to do research and break down complex concepts into easy, actionable steps. It can take up to 3 months to get through Flight School, depending on your level of knowledge and what path you take. So I imagine there is plenty of complex concepts sitting there waiting for me to dissect and give back to you guys. Luckily, I'm recording the news the night before this episode launches because this story is hot off the presses. Seriously, it's about 3 hours old. Do you remember all that work you did to make sure you have authorship set up on all of your websites and blogs? Google and thus all of the SEOs out there said you have to get authorship set up so Google can link all of your stuff together and get you higher rankings. Rel equals author. They all shouted this. Well, never mind. Google authorship is now dead. Yeah, Googler John Mueller, who has been involved with the authorship markup from the beginning, announced Thursday evening that they have made the difficult decision to stop showing authorship in search results. Basically, they weren't seeing any benefit to the users. The good news for those of us using authorship markup already, Mueller says their test removing authorship generally does not seem to reduce traffic to sites, nor does it increase clicks on ads. So them removing the authorship is probably not going to have a negative effect on any of us who are already using it. You know, honestly, I saw this coming. We showed an article a few weeks ago where Google was actually going through and removing the photographs, the thumbnails of the authors that were connected to author profiles. They were still connected. The authorship was still there, but the profile photos were gone. So we could tell that they were playing around with it and that this was probably about to land. So those are the stories that you need to know about this week. Before I go, I want to remind you that I'm available for one-on-one coaching sessions. Now is the time to tweak and hone your digital marketing before we hit the holiday season. Trust me, it's just around the corner. Just look for the schedule a one-on-one tab at the bottom of any page on thebusymarketer.com. Also, I want to remind you that it is the most wonderful time of the year. Yes, it's football season. And Saturday is our home opener. To celebrate, I'm going to forgo my usual jazz theme and wrap up today's episode of the Busy Marketer Podcast with the East Carolina University Marching Pirates and EC Victory. Head on over to my website for show notes and links to everything we've discussed today, including KP's contact info. Go to thebusymarketer.com/19. If you like what you heard today, I would appreciate you leaving a rating and review in iTunes or Stitcher Radio. We need stars and written reviews so that more listeners like you can find the podcast. Wait for it. Share the love and tweet a link to the podcast by going to thebusymarketer.com/love, which will create a post that you can easily share on Twitter. You can also connect with me there at BJ Smith Strategy. Thanks again for all the love and support. Until next time, remember to focus on the important tasks and have a productive week. Go Pirates!